This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins.
And a very good morning to you. We're here in for Eric and Vince. Of course, they'll be back with you tomorrow. At least Vince will be back with you tomorrow. We're here with Julian Johnson. And, of course, we've got Isaac in here helping out in the production studio with us. And we've got a busy show ahead. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. But, you know, of course, today is Memorial Day, Julian, and there are a number of events and ceremonies and observances going on throughout the area. And we certainly want to highlight those today. And I know that Wyatt did a story on one of those events.
Yes, he did. It's Memorial Day Mass, which honors Civil War veterans. It'll be at Calvary Cemetery today. Wyatt spoke to Deacon Dean Collins with the Milwaukee Chapter of the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War. And, you know, they talked a little bit about that. So that'll be more so on the 7 o'clock hour. I'll air that story and everything. And, you know, hopefully that'll brighten somebody's day today.
Okay. And well, also, in addition to that, we're also in the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to be talking with representatives of the Wauwatosa event, which is going on. And they have a very moving speaker who is a Gold Star brother from the Gulf War, and we will tell you about that. But some of the other events going on that I think people should know about. Are you aware, Julian, that at Veterans Park, they have 27,316 American flags on display through May 30th?
That's a lot of flags.
That is, but certainly honoring those who have served our country and the fallen. Also at Wood National Cemetery, and you know, that is the oldest, largest operating cemetery in the state of Wisconsin. And their event is beginning at 8 o'clock this morning with a memorial service in the chapel. They're then going to have a wreath-laying ceremony in the Garden of Honor, which is the veterans section. But then throughout the day, they're going to have a number of costume historical reenactors and talking about some of the experiences and some of the things that the men and women who have served this country and have
reenactors?
Fallen. Yeah.
So like people who are going to act like they're from the war?
They would be, for example, if you have a Civil War reenactor, you might have somebody who's representing Abraham Lincoln. And they will be, it's fascinating. It really is. And they're going to be doing that. New Berlin, they've got their event at 11 o'clock this morning at Highland Memorial Park Cemetery. Mequon Thiensville is going to have an observance at 10 o'clock this morning at the Mequon City Hall. In Waukesha, at Riverside Ceremony at Veterans Park, that's at 10 a.m. And at Cutler Park at 11. Merton has a Memorial Day Parade that gets underway at 10 o'clock. And in Elm Grove, their Memorial Day Parade goes on at 10:30 this morning. And by the way, if you want to access all of that list, you can text the word events to our WTMJ talk and text line at 855-616-1620. It has all the times and all of the locations for those events that are going on today. A number of observances honoring those who have fallen in service to our country. So, Julian, I know you're going to be on top of that today. I look forward to hearing Wyatt's story during the 7 o'clock hour. And, of course, we're going to be talking about Memorial Day this morning. And, you know, a lot of people yesterday were washed out. They weren't too happy with their grilling. So TMJ4 meteorologist is going to join us a little later on, Brenda Johnson. He's going to take a look at yesterday's storms as well as today's cookout forecast. Plus, you know, we played a little bit of this segment yesterday, but I had the opportunity the other day to talk with former Congressman Patrick Kennedy about his struggle with mental health and his addiction issues. So we're going to ask him about that, but also we're going to talk about his cousin, RFK, and running for president. He's got some pretty strong opinions about that, and former President Trump as well as President Biden. Plus, there is a little known secret. You know, we know so much about the Kennedy side of the family, but he reveals how his grandmother on his mother's side passed away, which is actually shocking. And we'll hear about that, as well as Senator Ted and Joan Kennedy's problems with alcohol, and Patrick does not hold back. So I think you're going to want to hear that. We're going to have that entire interview for you later on this morning. Also, cicadas are out to get your car. I know a lot of people have seen them already. I'm hearing about dogs that are out there eating them. Don't let them overeat because they can get sick. And I guess they're crunchy. They're supposed to be pretty delicious.
Crunchy cicadas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to just leave that alone.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, but the dogs are eating them. They really do. And right. The kitties, I think, do too. Also, speaking of things to eat, we're going to have one of the chefs participating in Unwrapped, which is a fundraiser for Sharp Literacy. Now, this is really neat. I don't know if you've ever been to this one, Julian, but they create gourmet dishes from McDonald's ingredients. And... yeah, you're looking surprised.
But is that still healthy, though? That would be my question.
I don't know about it being healthy, but it sure is tasty. and we've also got some Memorial Day grilling tips for you. And, of course, as summer begins, there are going to be more motorcycles on the road. So we're going to talk about some of those safety tips, not just for riders, but for drivers who have to navigate all those motorcycle guys out there. Plus, we've got a firehouse cooking challenge. So if you have any firefighters in your family, you'll want to hear about that. Also, Eric Bilstead's going to be here spotlighting an everyday hero. And also, we're going to hear his tasting experience with food. There's definitely a food theme going on today. Yeah. He went to the Summerfest tasting event. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're also going to have the foreman of the jury for the Mark Jensen murder trial. He's written a book based on his experiences. It's a novel. And he's going to tell us about it and some of the characters in it. I think you're going to find that really interesting. So we do have a busy show this morning on the Memorial Day edition of Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins, Julian Johnson in the newsroom. We've got Isaac here, of course, pushing those buttons. And in just a couple minutes, we have Wyatt Barmore-Pooley with sports. It's all here on WTMJ, where it's 59 degrees at 6:14.
The Brewers avoid the sweep in Boston. The crew dropping a nail-biter in the series finale. Elvis Peguero, who had allowed just one hit and no runs in his previous five outings, allowing Boston to break the tie in the eighth inning. It took only three pitches.
Peguero looks back at second in the pitch. And a little bleeder into left. That's down for a base hit. Rafael around third. The Red Sox have a 2-1 lead.
The offense only managing one run, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. A disappointing end to the road trip, which Milwaukee finishes 4-5 on. They do take the series from the Red Sox 3-2. Now it's time for a big division showdown with the Cubs. Only three games separate the two teams. Brewers in first place in the NL Central, Cubs in second. And of course, it's the return of Craig Counsell to the ballpark where he managed in the home dugout for 9 years. For the first time, he'll be in the first base dugout and wearing a different shade of blue. His successor, Pat Murphy, says he plans to check in with his former colleague.
I'll probably call him to see how he's doing, if he needs anything. Stop to the store to him. He's going to have a late night. If he needs anything, I'll stop to the store and give him a sandwich or something or whatever, you know, whatever he wants. But, I mean, we're friends, so I'm right up the road from him here in Chicago. He can stay at the place.
Our coverage starting at 2 with Brewers warm-up with Dom Catronio here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals have done it again. It was deja vu all over again. A 2-0 victory for the Grand Rapids Griffins, and the Ads' magical season continues. They are moving on to the Western Conference Finals in the Calder Cup playoffs. They'll take on the Coachella Valley Firebirds for the second straight season. Yes, that Coachella. And let's see if the City of Festivals can prove its dominance in hockey as well as on the stage. Game 1 set for Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
Thanks a lot, Wyatt. And coming up, we've got Ken Humphrey, who's going to be joining us. And fascinating book. If you're looking for a summer read, and of course, in Memorial Day, we start thinking about going to the beach, sitting around the pool, going on vacation. It's a really interesting book. We're going to hear about that based on a true story that happened right here in Wisconsin. It's all ahead of Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. It's 6:17 and 59 degrees.
Time for WTMJ. Johnson & Sons paving time saver traffic on the outskirts of the Milwaukee area on I-94 West, about 2.5 miles from the ramp on Moreland Road. The right shoulder is blocked due to a disabled vehicle. And then also, as we mentioned earlier, within the Greenfield area, east 0.2 miles beyond I-43 North, the right lane is closed due to a disabled vehicle.
Well, Julian, you would think on Memorial Day, there wouldn't be a whole lot of traffic out there, but you know, I was driving in on 94 today, and there was a guy he was going at least 95.
I wonder where he was going.
I don't know. He was headed towards the lake. I don't know what was out there at this hour of the morning, but he was really hitting it. So I suppose there's going to be some people out there who aren't necessarily going to be driving safely today.
Unfortunately, it's Milwaukee. So
yeah. Well, and you know, here's the other thing, too, is really right now, people maybe are going to visit relatives or whatever, but later on today, that's where it's going to get a little crazy when people are all headed home. Or they're coming from up north or from the lake house or whatever in case they've got to go to work tomorrow. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's take a look at your weather. It's going to be mostly cloudy and breezy today. We've got a chance of some scattered afternoon and rainstorms. Also going into the evening, 70 is going to be your high. So at least you'll get some grilling in today than tonight. That rain's going to be ending and we're going to get down to 54 degrees tomorrow. We've got a few more scattered showers and thunderstorms with a high of 68. Right now, 59 degrees. At 6:21 in WTMJ. And, you know, it was really interesting where a couple of weeks ago I had the opportunity to talk with Ken Humphrey. He was the foreman of the Mark Jensen jury trial. And based on his experiences, he has written a book called The Breakfast Jury. And Ken, how did that experience inspire your book?
So during the course of the trial, Bears mentioned that it was a four-week-long trial for us, so all of us jurors together for a total of 4 weeks. When they found out that I was an author and had already written books, a number of them said, you should write a book about this trial, because there were a lot of fascinating elements to the trial. My initial hesitation came from a couple of different points. One, I'm not really a nonfiction writer. All my work has been works of fiction. I don't know how to do nonfiction. And two, I thought, well, tell-alls from high-profile trials have been done to death. There's been a lot of them out there. And frankly, a lot of trial work from a juror's standpoint is rather boring. You show up, you sit, you listen, you take notes, and all the action comes at the end when you deliberate. But partway through it, because we were all together for a total of 4 weeks, you know, starting to get to know these people on different levels than you normally would for, say, a three-day trial, I realized there was a story here. And it wasn't necessarily about the trial. It was about the experience of us as jurors being together for 4 weeks, much like that 1980s movie, The Breakfast Club. And that really became the baseline theme for this book, is a bunch of strangers are thrown together, you know, for a month to decide the fate of a man accused of murder. And in the end, they find out that it was much more than just the trial.
All right.
It ended up being about their relationship with each other.
Why breakfast? Why did you, I get the connection to the movie, but was breakfast that important to you as jurors?
Strangely enough, yes. We didn't get fed. And because it was such a routine, you know, show up by this day every day, you know, here's your, you know, kind of your daily schedule. Within a couple of days, we realized, all right, we need something just to kick off the day. And we talk a lot about breakfast, breakfast pastries, breakfast foods, our favorite places. And it sort of just launched this impromptu activity of saying, okay, tomorrow I'm bringing breakfast. And it became sort of a ritual. So that's kind of the dual reason for the breakfast allegory there.
The jurors that you write about in your book, were they based on actual jurors that you worked with?
These are all the actual people in the jury pool with me. The only person I replaced was myself, because one, it'd be a little self-promoting to put me in there, but I also needed, I want to say, a dummy person or a straw man, essentially. And so I replaced myself as a jury foreman. But the rest of the jurors that are depicted in the book are lifted straight from the people who spent those 4 weeks with me. Names have been changed, but the personalities, even the quotes, some of the things that they said, are just lifted straight from those folks.
Did you have fun with creating a story of what maybe could have been or should have been from the actual happenings of your experience as a jury foreman?
Absolutely. For several reasons. One was starting to bounce ideas off some of the jurors as I was in the writing. Right? Because I had promised them, by the end of the trial, I said, we're going to reunite on the 1 year anniversary of our verdict, and I'm going to have a signed book for all of you. Right? That was my commitment to them. So everybody goes their own way, and most of them probably aren't even thinking about this book or about their time on the jury, whereas I've got it locked in my head. And I reached out to a few different jurors just to kind of pick apart some detailed things, ask some questions, but also start brainstorming on what certain elements of the book should look like. And so, yes, it was a blast. One of the things I really wanted to try and include was some of the humor that we just all brought to the table in the jury room, right? 4 weeks on a jury pool is really no fun for anybody. And so you have to do something to maintain a sliver of sanity. And a lot of that I tried to depict through the humor.
When you gave your fellow jurors the book, were they happy with their portrayals?
They were. I mean, nobody yelled at me. Nobody kicked me in a kneecap. One of the ladies that had volunteered to be foreman before they selected me, and I told them, like, guess what? You get to be foreman. Unfortunately, something bad happens to you in the book. Thank you for your service.
Oh.
You know, so she accepted that with a smile. You know, and a few of them had already read the book before we got back together. Because I technically published a book a couple weeks before our reunion because I needed to get it out and available and order myself copies. So a couple of them actually came to the reunion having read the book already and knowing what it was about. And yeah, there seemed to be a pretty good reaction to it. I seemed to enjoy it that I had read it.
Ken, it's kind of a hard question, but are you at all concerned that the attorneys for the defense are going to come back and maybe ask for a mistrial or that they might appeal the conviction because you've written a book?
It was a consideration going into it on advice of a literary lawyer that I consulted. You know, there are a few things that I did. And one is to make it absolutely clear that this is a work of fiction and that while some of the events and happenings came straight from the trial itself, that A, this is a work of fiction, and B, it really only taps into things that had happened during the trial, things that were said during the trial. So I was careful not to give the impression that the jury had preordained their verdict on day two, or that, you know, there was something that would have led to an appeal opening. So, yeah, it was a consideration, and I did my best to tread carefully around that.
Well, I know a lot of people this time of year are getting their books ready because they're going to take them on vacation with them. They might be going to the beach. They might just want to sit around the pool, or maybe they just want to sit on the patio and have a fun read. It is The Breakfast Jury by Ken Humphrey. You might even recognize some of the places that he writes about because he lives right here in Wisconsin. And Ken, where can they get the book?
One of the easiest ways is going to be going to my website, kenhumphrey.com. From there, you can see purchase links through Amazon. I'm working to get the book in wider distribution to independent bookstores. And because this does have some shared characters with previous books that I've written, a previous trilogy, you can see links for other books that lead into this.
And again, it's The Breakfast Jury, a very interesting book. I'm Libby Collins at 628, and we have 59 degrees at WTMJ.
Did your home suffer damage from a storm or severe weather?
Welcome back to Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. It is 59 degrees at 636 on WTMJ. With Memorial Day just around the corner, people are thinking, where am I going to go for summer vacation? Well, there's only one person to ask. And of course, it's Rose Gray from Fox World Travel. And she hosts the show here on Saturdays. And Rose, I want to ask you, what are the destinations people are talking about for summer travel this year?
Well, a couple of our sources, like TripAdvisor, which you think, Rose, you actually use TripAdvisor? I do. I take everything with a grain of salt, and I make sure I understand where the comments are coming from. But they also do some pretty remarkable research, and we use that. I also looked at MasterCard.com. They have a very robust travel department that gives us some heads up on that. And what they're saying is, they've got a list of places that they're thinking people are going to go globally, and then they've got a list that they think people are going to travel to domestically. Believe it or not, the number one global destination throughout the United States is Cancun. Cancun.
Really?
It's just
not Europe.
I think it's easy, it's affordable, and if your kids are out of school, that doesn't stop you from going to a wonderful family-friendly all-inclusive resort in Cancun or the Riviera Maya. And they're stretching their boundaries. Remember, it used to just be Cancun, and now you can go south to the Playa del Carmen area and continue on that way all the way down to Akumal, but they're also going north and they're developing that area. So you can also go across to Isla Mujeres and you can do some other things. They've made some outstanding golf courses now to attract that kind of person. So it's not just a winter getaway anymore. London, number two on this list with both of the companies. Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic for the very same reasons as Cancun. Then Paris, always, you know, there's no bad time to go to Paris. And because of the Olympics and all of that kind of thing, people are avoiding sometimes, but they want to see some of that pre-Olympic or post-Olympic hype. And so some people are, I mean, there's no bad time to go to Paris, in my opinion. Cabo San Lucas, Rome, Aruba, Barcelona, Spain. So those are some of the places that these people who do the research are saying are going to be in the top 10.
Now, for international travel, how much ahead of time should you be booking those flights?
I would say if you're doing something in Rome or Paris or Barcelona or any of the European destinations, I would probably be doing that now. And I would be, you know, hoping I could still get something for July and August. Again, using a travel advisor is probably a very, very good idea because they can give you suggestions like you may want to avoid August because literally Europe shuts down during August. Now, that hasn't stopped some U.S. travelers, but that's when the Europeans take their holiday. So it's not uncommon for somebody that owns a shop or a restaurant to close for 2 or 3 weeks and go on their family holiday. And so you may find some things are closed at that time. So, you know, those are the suggestions that we would give you. Now, domestically, we're looking at Vegas, Myrtle Beach, Orlando, Honolulu, New York, Chicago, Key West, San Diego, Boston. All of the places that you would think are going to be hot spots are going to be hot spots.
Are you still getting a lot of inquiries about Disney World? Because their prices have gone up so much.
We're finding out that some people are saying, you know what? We thought about Disney World, but what if we went to Universal instead? Or what if we did Tampa and just did a day or two at Disney and traveled back and forth? Or how can we make this more affordable? Because we looked at doing the wow factor where we stay on the property and just get a 4-day pass and stay there for 5 days. We've got 3 kids. We priced it out. It's crazy expensive. What are some other options? Don't forget, there are all kinds of other parks and amusement parks throughout. What about Legoland? What about taking them to some other
SeaWorld?
Many other options. It's doable, and we understand. Once your kids get to a certain level, grade 6, grade 7, it's not really easy to take them out of school anymore. And so we're seeing more and more people say, I know this isn't the perfect time. I know it's summer. I know the crowds are going to be high, but this is when we can travel.
Now, I know it's not this summer, but you have on Fox World Travel Show have just announced some fabulous exotic trips. I'm thinking Galapagos.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Africa. And they're not in the summer. They're
fall.
About a year off.
Yep.
Yeah, about a year off. What do you need to do if you want to find out more about these fabulous bucket list trips?
Start the conversation. Just look at our website, foxworldtravel.com. Pick up the phone and call 866-GO-FOX-GO. Just because you make an inquiry, you're not giving us a commitment. You just want more information. Why did you pick this trip? Why did you pick this itinerary? Who's going to be taking this itinerary? What do I know about the tour operator that you're using? What are the vaccination requirements? Are there any? How much validity do I have to have on my passport? Do I need a visa? Those are questions that we can readily answer for you, and that can help you make the decision. You look at the new catalog of all of the trips that we've got out there, and it's hard to choose. It's very hard to choose.
All right, one last question. Where are you going this summer?
Well, this summer, I'm taking a private group to Alaska to celebrate a milestone birthday, which we will not give that number, but I think some people can figure it out.
You're going to be 30, huh?
Yeah, thanks. And I have the pleasure of just being able to take my husband and 48 of our closest friends and family on what is to me my trip of a lifetime. But once that trip is over, I'm hitting the ground running. I'm going to Germany with Scafidi. I'm doing a battlefield trip again with John Bromage, and then I'm off and running. So,
okay. And if you want to learn more, you can go to where again?
Foxworldtravel.com.
Rose Gray, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I love that Rose is going to take 48 of her closest friends on a trip to Alaska. It is 6:42, where we have 59 degrees at WTMJ in just a couple minutes. We've got Wyatt Barmore, Pooley and Sports right here on Wisconsin Morning News.
A tense game boiling over in the seventh inning at Fenway Park after a Christian Yelich inning-ending ground out. Red Sox pitcher Chris Martin exchanging words with Brewers first base coach Quinton Berry, leading to the benches emptying yet again this season for the Brew Crew. No ejections on either side. After the game, Brewers manager Pat Murphy weighing in on the dust-up.
I'm not going to speculate what the kid was doing, but if you're staring at somebody and you're saying it, it could be interpreted that you're saying it to them. So, you know, we take offense to you going to yell at us and say something and make it personal. We're going to stand up for ourselves.
Between the lines, Boston would take the lead in the eighth on only three pitches to start the inning from Elvis Peguero, a double and a single, and that'd be all the Red Sox would need to win 2-1 and stave off the sweep. Next up is day baseball on Memorial Day, as it should be, and it should be a doozy. For his first time as a visiting manager, Council bringing his second-place Cubs in for a four-game set against the NL Central leading Brewers. Our coverage will get started with Brewers warm-up at 2 with Dom Catronio. Network coverage at 2:35 right here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals are moving on. The Ads knock off the Grand Rapids Griffins Sunday evening in a do-or-die Game 5 at Milwaukee Panther Arena. Goaltender Troy Gostnik stopping all 30 shots he saw. He's the first Ads goalie in over 11 years to blank the opponent in the Calder Cup playoffs. Attendance for the game was over 7,800, the most ever for the Admirals since they joined the AHL back in 2001. Now it's a familiar face in the Western Conference Finals, the Coachella Valley Firebirds. The Ads hoping to cancel their show this year. Game 1 in California is Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
That's an understatement, Wyatt, that it's going to be a doozy. WTMJ's five-day forecast is sponsored by Dave Drakamp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition, and it is going to be mostly cloudy and breezy today. We've got some scattered afternoon and evening storms. High of 70 degrees. We might get some pretty heavy wind gusts up to 30 miles an hour. Then tonight, that rain's going to end. It'll be mostly cloudy, down to 54 degrees. Tomorrow looks like we've got some scattered showers and thunderstorms. It's going to be cloudy, 68 for a high. Finally, we get some sunshine on Wednesday with a high of 62 degrees, 67 inland. Thursday looks mostly sunny. Same thing, 62 near the lake, 68 as you go further inland. And then Friday, partly cloudy with a high of 68. Currently in Brookfield, it's 53 degrees. Richfield has 52. Delafield's at 53. We have 59 degrees at WTMJ at 6:48. And in just a couple minutes, we're going to tell you how to create a gourmet meal out of McDonald's ingredients. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
It is one of the favorite events of the year, and that's where chefs from all over the area take McDonald's ingredients and create gourmet meals out of it. Well, joining us from Sharp Literacy is Linda Kohler-Welsh and also one of the chefs involved, David Sapp. He is the executive chef of Central Standard Craft House Kitchen, and this is the ninth time you've been doing this, Linda.
This is our ninth year. I can't believe it. And every year it just seems we get bigger and the chefs are just amazing. So we're lucky to continue to find such great chefs that will volunteer their time to help us out.
And speaking about one of the great chefs, David Sapp is here. And David, tell us about your dish and how you conceived it.
Sure. So I'm going to do kind of a riff on a traditional cordon bleu. We're going to take the crispy chicken filet and we're going to top that with some asparagus and Gruyere. And that's going to sit on top of a crispy hash brown with some caramelized onions. And then I'm going to take the honey mustard sauce and turn that into a little cream-based sauce and kind of finish it with that.
Now, are there any rules as to how many McDonald's ingredients you have to use and how many of your own ingredients you can add?
No, they were very open with ordering whatever I like. I got a whole list of all the McDonald's specs and I get to pick from that.
And I take it you've already prepared this as like a practice for it.
I've prepared it in my mind.
Oh, you all. Haven't actually
oh,
made
no,
it yet?
I like to go off last minute, just roll it.
What's the excitement of that?
That's probably when I do my best work, just going with the flow.
You like to improvise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find this, Linda, with many of the chefs?
Not really, no. So I'm looking forward to this too.
So who are some of the other chefs that are involved in addition to David?
Sure, we have the executive chef, Mike Gengry of Harbor House, and he is preparing a chipotle salmon tacos with bacon and apple slaw, cilantro lime crema.
Hmm.
We have Chef Amanda Wisht of Lemonnier, spicy sweet barbecue meatballs with creamy mashed potatoes. We have Executive Chef Tom McGiddy and Chef Sharika Thompson of the Milwaukee Athletic Club. And they're doing a hearty cheeseburger soup with savory Big Mac croutons. Chef Ashton Rotman of Rot's Hot
that we know very well here at TMJ. Yeah.
This is his second year. He's going to be doing cheesy biscuits with sweet apple gravy and caramel sauce. And then executive chef Brian Taborski from Saz's, and he always does something with apples. So he is doing the luscious Jamaican apple pone cake with sweet caramel drizzle.
So now, David, now that you've heard what the other chefs are doing, are you going to change anything that you have in mind?
No, absolutely not. A lot of it came from ingredients from McDonald's that I like. The crispy chicken is one of my favorite sandwiches.
Is it really?
Yeah, the hash browns. Breakfast at McDonald's is my fave.
And Linda, of course, you couldn't do this without the partnership of McDonald's.
Yes, absolutely. So for 9 years, they've been just generous to allow all the chefs to pick, like David was saying, that there's just pages and pages of McDonald's ingredients, some that they are currently using and some they've used in the past and maybe some that they're using in the future. And they donate all in the ingredients. So that really does keep our costs lower so that we can raise more money for our mission.
Well, I know another addition this year is going to be the craft bar. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Central Standard Distillery. They're going to do some really fun drinks kind of from the 1920s because we're at the Deco this year, which is just an awesome venue in West Dallas. So they're doing like a bee's knees. So some of these old classic cocktails from the 1920s. And then a Deco is also doing some fun one like slow gin fizzes and just kind of from the past. So that'll be really awesome.
Now, when is this all taking place?
This is taking place on May 30th, which is just over a week away. And we're at the Deco, 5 to 8 p.m. Tickets are still available. Plenty of parking, outdoor patio, and it's just a really, really awesome venue.
And let's talk about why you do it and some of the work that Sharp Literacy does.
Sure. Sharp has been around for 28 years, which sometimes is really hard to believe. But our mission is that we partner with educators to foster a love of learning and brighten children's future through our innovative experiential programming. So we're K through fifth grade. We're one of the few nonprofits, if the only nonprofits, that really are allowed in the classroom during the academic day. So this year we're in 49 schools. We are in Milwaukee Public Schools. We're in charter and choice schools, so like St. Aug Prep and Mesmer. And then we're in the school district of Waukesha, which we recently expanded, and then a charter school in Waukesha as well, La Casa de Esperanza. We have a very, very diverse student population. We're about 47% Hispanic and about 43% Black. So we're in all urban schools, and they're really the ones that, you know, we're so proud to be able to bring our program and our experiences to them, because without us, they probably wouldn't have those opportunities. And I mean, we're teaching kids third grade, they're doing game design, which is just amazing. The lower elementary, they're learning all about pollination and water cycles and plants and animals. And then our fourth grade is all about coding and design. And fifth grade is all about engineering and coding the Hone Bridge, which we've had a great relationship with them. And I'm really excited because our summer program begins in a couple of weeks and we're adding AI and art. So we're going to be teaching these young kids all about AI and how they can use it and use it properly and where you can do some really fun things. So we're just proud of, you know, my staff and all the innovative programming that they've established.
And we've got David Sapp here. He is the executive chef of Central Standard Craft House and Kitchen. And David, what excites you most about partnering with Sharp Literacy?
Well, this is my first year and I enjoy doing events like this because the cause is always good. The cause is always positive for the community and it just helps Craft House give back and just be part of that community.
All right. And I know you're looking forward to preparing your dish. Do you think there'll be a little friendly competition among the chefs who are going to be there this year?
Yeah, there always is. Every event I've done like this, there always is. It's friendly, though, for sure.
Again, it's taking place on Thursday, May 30th. Tickets are available. And how can we get them, Linda?
Sharpliteracy.org. As soon as you get on our website, the homepage will take you right to Unwrapped.
Linda Kohler-Welsh from Sharp Literacy, David Sapp, the executive chef of Central Standard Craft House Kitchen and one of the chefs participating in Sharp's Unwrapped this year. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much, Libby.
It's 6:57, 59 degrees at WTMJ. Coming up here after the news, we're going to be talking with the people who are behind the Wauwatosa Memorial Day program. That's going to take place a little bit later on this morning, and it is going to be a very moving event. We want to share that with you, and we'll also tell you about some of the other Memorial Day events going on throughout the area. That's all coming up on Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. Tomorrow, Vince is going to be back, and Eric's off this week. He's taking some time off, I think. So, yeah, so it'll be Vince. No worries. He hasn't gone anywhere. Let's see. Julian's up next with the news, and we'll be back with the Wauwatosa Memorial Day program straight ahead on WTMJ.
This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins.
Well, it's actually Wisconsin Morning News Memorial Day edition, long weekend. We can go into all of that.
A whole kid and caboodle.
Yeah. Well, of course, and the reason we are commemorating today is a very important one because it honors all those who have served this country and given their all for us. And joining us on our Tri-County Contracting Hotline is Mike Anich. He is with the City of Wauwatosa and their Special Events Committee, and they have a Memorial Day program that begins today at 9 o'clock at Hart Park. And Mike, it's a very special event. I know we have a lot of these going on throughout the area, but this one in particular, I think people will find very moving because of one of the individuals who's involved.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me here and highlighting our Wauwatosa Memorial Day observance, which again is today at Monday, May 27th at 9 a.m. at Hart Park in Wauwatosa. We are going to be right near the skateboard area, so if people are looking for us, that's where we're going to be. And like you said, our guest speaker is Aaron Jarabek. Aaron is a Wauwatosa resident, and Memorial Day is very special to him, and he comes at it from a little different way than most of us because his brother was a United States Marine who was killed in Iraq in the 2000s. So he's going to reflect on his grief and how he handles that and also how he is making the most that he can out of this and is trying to turn this into a positive part of his life. So. Yeah, again, Monday, May 27th today at 9 a.m. at Hart Park in Wauwatosa.
In addition to Aaron speaking, what else is going to be going on, Mike?
So, thank you. Yeah, the mayor is going to give a reflection, Mayor Dennis McBride. We have the Greater Milwaukee Fire and Police Pipes and Drums are going to play three different songs. We have our local Boy Scout troop is going to present the colors, do the Pledge of Allegiance, and the Star Spangled Banner. And, you know, it's going to be a hour of remember and honor. And then we're going to give some ice cream to the kids and get you on your way for the rest of your Memorial Day.
Yeah. I think that there are fewer celebrations like this, or memorials, I should say, every year. And the fact that Wauwatosa is not just having this event to commemorate all that these brave men and women gave to our country, but also keeping it alive and trying to bring it, as you said, to younger kids and let them know how important it is for those who have served this country.
Absolutely. We're trying to market this to our families and their kids so that this tradition can continue. One of the other things that we're highlighting at our memorial service is the vision of the Wauwatosa Veterans Memorial. We, a group of veterans, are building a veterans memorial in Wauwatosa at the site that we're having this ceremony today. And we're going to talk about that and our funding gap and what we need to get us across the goal line on that. So we will be discussing that. We'll have
what are the plans?
Pictures and plans.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is what are you planning to put there?
So it's going to be a fairly large circle of paved concrete with flags from each of the branches of service. We're going to have kiosks where you're going to be able to look up and find out if there's a brick that you bought or a paver that you bought, where that would be for your veteran's name or anything else that we have uploaded onto our site about Wauwatosa veterans, where they are and where they're buried in Wauwatosa cemeteries or anything else that is put on there. And you can find out about your grandpa or your uncle if you have uploaded that information. We'll have a kiosk for that. It's going to be lit up. It's going to be pretty impressive. So,
well, yeah, I think it really is. And any idea when you might actually have that So people can come and see it. Have you looked forward? I know you said there's a funding gap, but any plans as to when that actually will happen?
Yeah, we hope to break ground within a year. So, you know, we have to work with the city and the various councils and committees on that, and with the construction. And so it's a work in progress, but we're continuing on, and we hope to be done sooner than later.
Oh, I'm so happy that you're sharing this with us today. And again, this gets underway at 9 o'clock this morning. It's going to be at Hart Park in Wauwatosa, right in the area around the skate park. And everyone is invited. And again, I think Aaron is going to be a very moving speaker. And I hope a lot of people come to hear what he has to say today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us on, and I appreciate it.
All right, Mike Anich, thank you for joining us today on Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins on this Memorial Day, and there are a number of events and observances going on around the area. In addition to what we just talked about in Wauwatosa, I'll share a couple of these with you after we get to sports with Wyatt. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. It is 59 degrees at 7:14 on WTMJ.
The Brewers avoid the sweep in Boston, the crew dropping a nail-biter in the series finale. Elvis Piguero, who had allowed just one hit and no runs in his previous five outings, allowing Boston to break the tie in the eighth inning. It took only three pitches.
Piguero looks back at second in the pitch. And a little bleeder into left. That's down for a base hit. Rafael around third. The Red Sox have a 2-1 lead.
The offense only managing one run, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position, a disappointing end to the road trip, which Milwaukee finishes 4-5 on. They do take the series from the Red Sox 3-2. Now it's time for a big division showdown with the Cubs. Only three games separate the two teams. Brewers in first place in the NL Central, Cubs in second. And of course, it's the return of Craig Counsell to the ballpark where he managed in the home dugout for 9 years. For the first time, he'll be in the first base dugout and wearing a different shade of blue. His successor, Pat Murphy, says he plans to check in with his former colleague.
I'll probably call him to see how he's doing, if he needs anything. Stop to the store to him. He's going to have a late night. If he needs anything, I'll stop to the store and give him a sandwich or something or whatever, you know, whatever he wants. But, I mean, we're friends. So I'm right up the road from him here in Chicago. He can stay at the place.
Our coverage starting at 2 with Brewers warm-up with Dom Catronio here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals have done it again. It was deja vu all over again. A 2-0 victory for the Grand Rapids Griffins, and the Ads' magical season continues. They are moving on to the Western Conference Finals in the Calder Cup playoffs. They'll take on the Coachella Valley Firebirds for the second straight season. Yes, that Coachella. And let's see if the City of Festivals can prove its dominance in hockey as well as on the stage. Game 1 set for Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
Thanks a lot, Wyatt. It's 7:17, 59 degrees. We're going to have your forecast. And also, I'll tell you some of the other events going on throughout the area for this Memorial Day. It's all ahead right here on WTMJ. It's 7:19 on WTMJ. Today it looks like on your Memorial Day, we're going to have some scattered showers, and looks like that's going to be more in the afternoon and the evening, and it's going to be under cloudy skies. It's going to be breezy. We will get up to about 70 degrees then tonight. The rain will end, 54 for a low, and tomorrow looks like more scattered showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a high of 68. Right now, West Bend has 53. Sussex is at 53. Waterford has 54. We're at 59 at WTMJ at 7:20. We talked about the event getting underway at 9 o'clock this morning at Hart Park in Wauwatosa. Also, at 8 o'clock this morning at Wood National Cemetery, and keep in mind that is Milwaukee's oldest, largest operating cemetery, they're going to have a memorial service. It's going to start in the chapel. There will then be a wreath-laying ceremony in the Garden of Honor. And they're also going to have some costumed historical reenactors through the grounds. It should be a fascinating event and a way to certainly honor Memorial Day. In Veterans Park, there are 27,316 flags on display. Those are going to be course, today through May 30th. Julian talked about this during the 7 o'clock news at Calvary Cemetery. At 10 a.m. this morning, there's an outdoor mass and a patriotic program. In New Berlin at Highland Memorial Cemetery, their observance gets underway at 11 o'clock this morning. In Mequon, Thiensville, it's at Mequon City Hall at 10 o'clock this morning. In Waukesha, their Memorial Day event gets underway at Riverside Ceremony at Veterans Park at 10 o'clock and at Cutler Park at 11 a.m. In Merton, they're having a Memorial Day parade. That's at 10 a.m. And the Elm Grove Memorial Day parade gets underway at 10:30 this morning. And if you want that entire list, you can text the word events to WTMJ Talk and Text Line at 855-616-1620. And we'll be happy to share that with you. But again, I think it's important to certainly honor those who gave all to this country on this Memorial Day. It's 7:22 and looks like they're coming to get you. Well, I don't know if you've heard them yet, but they're out there. It's those cicadas, and they're back after, what, 17 years? And no, they're supposed to be harmless to humans, but guess what? They could do a lot of damage to other things that you own. Joining us is Nathan Kruger. He is with Zeebart right here in Milwaukee. And Nathan, have you heard any of them yet?
No, I haven't heard of them yet, but they're coming.
Yeah, this is what, the biggest brood in like 100 years or something?
It's supposed to be. I'm really curious to see how bad they get this year. I mean, you know, lately we've had the box alders and everything, the stink bugs, but here we go with cicadas.
They keep telling us, don't worry about them. You might hear them. You might see big clusters of them, but they're not a danger. But you have found that they can do damage. Tell us a little bit about that and why it happens.
Driving around throughout the day, they're going to hit the front end of the vehicle, and they're a very acidic bug. When they splatter on the paint of your vehicle, it's like a little spot of acid on there that can etch your clear coat. So it can leave a visible mark. So the key in that is, one, wash your car often, get to the front end, make sure you get those bug splatters off as fast as possible before they have a time to sit on there, bake in the sun, and etch your clear coat. And other than that, you want some type of protective coating over that clear coat. But still, regular washing, get them off of there right away. And as many as they say there's going to be, it's going to be the year to really protect your front end, protect the paint on the vehicle, and make sure you don't get those clear coat stains.
You're going to hit bugs regardless. I mean, that's just part of life when you're out driving. But do you think that the cicadas are more damaging than other kinds of insects that might hit your car?
From what I've read on them, yeah, it's just their acid content is high. They're a larger bug, and the volume of them, there's supposed to be so many that it's just going to be excessive versus your standard bug impacts. Even normal bugs can cause clear coat stains, and you want to get those off. But it's especially important this year with the emergence of cicadas and the volume that there's going to be, just to make sure that you're being diligent with it.
What happens, say, if you go for a vacation and you don't have time to get your car cleaned while you're out for that week or two, and the bugs hit the car, will that automatically stain? I mean, how long can you leave bug guts on your car before they're going to do any real damage?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on what's on top of your paint. If you haven't had your vehicle protected, if you have nothing on your paint, if it's just raw clear coat, I think you can get etching probably within 4 to 5 days, weather conditions determining. You know what I mean? If it's sunny out and they're dry on there and it just sits on your clear coat, it's going to create a little stain. The best bet is to get your paint protected ahead of time so that it's not sitting right on top of your clear coat. That's the ideal. That way that acid isn't getting down to the clear.
Does it affect the chrome the same way as it does paint finish?
Chrome is a little bit more durable. You know, it's just a little bit different of a finish where the acid doesn't affect it as much. So where we always see it is just basically on top of the painted surfaces of the vehicle.
What's the worst situation you've ever seen with a car from bugs hitting it?
Just like we talked about, etching in the clear, a bunch of little marks on there, you know, uneven marks where you can just tell it was acid from bugs that has etched the clear coat, and it stayed on there too long to where it etched too deep where you can't even polish it out.
Wow. I had no idea It could do that kind of damage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much. I'm going to have a little different view when I see those cicadas. I don't know if I can drive around them.
I wouldn't recommend it. Don't dodge and weave the cicadas. Let them hit. Clean them off early.
Nathan Kruger's from Zeebart. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Libby.
My greatest dread is that Migo, my dog, is going to start eating them, and I'll have that horrible cicada. crunch sound. Don't want to hear it. All right, 726, 58 degrees at WTMJ.
Here we go.
Let's see. I bet they're playing Summerfest, huh? What band is that, Isaac?
This is AJR.
I kind of like it. Wow. Okay. Well, and it is going to be a great time. By the way, I'm Libby Collins. Welcome back to the 7:30 hour of the Memorial Day edition of Wisconsin Morning News. The first weekend of that big gig is going to kick off on June 20th. And the food vendors gave a preview of what they're going to be serving at the big gig. WTMJ's Vince Petrano and Eric Bilstead from Wisconsin Morning News headed to the grounds to get a taste of the offerings.
All right, so what are you guys serving here today?
We are serving cocktail-sized empanadas, Cuban and Argentine beef.
All right, if I had to choose one, what should I go with?
I would go with the Argentine. It's our most authentic.
Okay. Do you have a secret to the recipe or anything like that?
Yes, but I can't tell you what it is.
So what are we serving here?
This is Perky's Old Fashioned. This is my mom's recipe.
Your mom Perky?
She is. Her nickname has been Perky since age 4. I had her on the back of the bottle. And if they're brandy Old Fashioned, it'll be in the amphitheater this year. We've been on the market for 2 years.
Where did she get the recipe from?
It's from my grandfather, actually. So it's been in the family for 60 years. Supposedly, he's like this mixologist. He always had martinis ready to pour in the fridge, and then he started playing around and did Old Fashioneds.
What's his nickname?
He didn't have one. Gilbert. That's why it's not Gilbert's.
We've been sampling everything, and there are a lot of new things and things we haven't heard of. So, Cousins, I've not heard of you. What do you make?
Cousins, we make sub sandwiches.
All right, very well, yes. Ooh, E. Remember I judged that brat contest, like the recipe contest for Johnsonville last year? This is the winner. Hey, Chef, we were a part. This is the brat that we picked last year, right?
Yes, this is the walking brat.
I picked this as the winner. This is my favorite. What do you think, E?
So I'm getting a little bit of a hint of, like, hickory, maybe?
Out of all that, it was really tasty.
Oh, yes, it tastes good. It's a brat.
So our fried bologna sub is exclusive to Summerfest, so you can't get it anywhere else except for Summerfest this year.
How do you make a fried bologna?
Fried bologna, so it's literally fried bologna.
Well, that's a good start. Great question, E.
I think I hear munching in the background. But you know what? This is the reason that Eric and Vince had to take today off, because I think they ate too much. All right. Speaking of eating, coming up here around 7:50, we've got some Memorial Day grilling tips for you. Yes, at least I think there's going to be time to get outside. Unlike yesterday, where I had intended to grill, and actually I did go out and put a few brats and burgers on the grill in the rain, getting wet. But yeah. We've got some good tips for you, and that's all coming up in just about 15 minutes here on WTMJ. It is going to be kind of a rainy day, but I don't think as much rain as yesterday. I don't think we have as much to worry about. Cloudy and breezy with those scattered afternoon and evening rainstorms and a high of 70 degrees. Right now, 58 degrees at WTMJ. 7:40 on WTMJ, 58 degrees. We've got Brendan Johnson, TMJ 4 meteorologist, with us. And Brendan, I want to find out about our grilling forecast for today, but yesterday was quite an experience. I know you were there early in the morning, and you were back in the news center in the late afternoon when all those storms came up. What do we know? I mean, were there any touchdowns of tornadoes?
So we think there may have actually been a probable tornado, Libby. So this is in and around the Milton area in northern Rock County. Yesterday, that line came in. I feel like every severe situation we've had this season, and they've mostly been low end, severe chances. We've had some sort of tornado warning or a tornado confirmed. That's just the way it's been this season. And yesterday was just another day where those storms caught the warm front. They started to spin a little bit, and we wound up with what is a likely tornado in and around the Milton area. What we do know this morning is that there's a lot of tree damage, certainly in northern and northeastern Rock County, and we do believe that there could have been a tornado associated with that, and there's a possibility attracting to Jefferson County. Our National Weather Service team, based out of Sullivan, is sending a survey team down to the area this morning, and they will have a closer look at that damage, and they'll make an official survey of the damage and then confirm a tornado and provide us some additional details. So we do know that a survey team is headed down that way this morning, probably already on their way there now.
When you talk about weather spotters or storm spotters during these warnings, who are those people?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got folks that, you know, are the Skywarn storm spotters. So those are folks that have gone to a training with the National Weather Service. A lot of those are going to be your local first responders, police and fire that are keeping an eye out, sheriff's departments. But we also have a lot of enthusiasts that go out and chase these storms across southern Wisconsin. So some folks, you know, were in touch with the National Weather Service. They were streaming. You know, it's a great way to get eyeballs on these storms that roll through the area. And we also have some professional meteorologists that are out there. And so I do know of one that was in Fort Atkinson. He is actually very involved with the Wisconsin, what we call the MesoNet. They're installing weather stations around the state. He was quite critical to some of the observations for those funnel clouds in and around the Fort Atkinson area. So we got a photo from him. And that's why the Weather Service kept those warnings going. We had a confirmed eyes on the ground that, hey, this storm was producing a funnel cloud, a tornado, and they wound up warning the line as it made its way through because of that potential. So it was key yesterday. Those eyeballs helped.
Okay, so now what about today? Because a lot of people got washed out yesterday, and they're really hoping to get the brats and the burgers on the grill today. So what can they expect?
Yeah, I hear you. So today, between now and I would say lunchtime, no worries about rain. Okay, we're going to stay dry. It is mostly cloudy out there. We're starting off with temperatures in the mid and upper 50s all across southeastern Wisconsin. We'll get the temperatures today, Libby, into the 60s. So we'll be a bit on the cooler side, mid and upper 60s, I'm thinking, maybe near 70 in a few spots. Later this afternoon, primarily after 2 or 3 o'clock, we're going to be under this northwesterly flow aloft. I'm thinking we're going to see some pop-up showers, perhaps a rumble of thunder or two. It's going to almost look like popcorn on the radar. And today it's going to be very isolated. The worst of the storms, I'm not expecting severe weather, but they could get tall enough to interact with some of the cold air aloft and generate a bit of some small hail. So we'll keep an eye out on that. And then as we head overnight, might get one last round around midnight. And then we'll start off tomorrow dry and then more scattered, I would say more widespread scattered showers, perhaps a few thunderstorms tomorrow. So tomorrow may be looking a bit more wet than today. And again, severe weather just really isn't in the cards.
We're glad to hear that. Well, listen, thank you so much for getting up with us this morning, and stay safe out there. Brenda, TMJ4 meteorologist Brenda Johnson, always great to hear from you.
You too, Libby. Take care.
It's 7:45. You're just a minute away from sports with Wyatt Barmore-Pooley on WTMJ.
A tense game boiling over in the seventh inning at Fenway Park after a Christian Yelich inning-ending ground out. Red Sox pitcher Chris Martin exchanging words with Brewers first base coach Quinton Berry, leading to the benches emptying yet again this season for the Brew Crew. No ejections on either side. After the game, Brewers manager Pat Murphy weighing in on the dust-up.
I'm not going to speculate what the kid was doing, but if you're staring at somebody and you're saying it, it could be interpreted that you're saying it to them. So, you know, we take offense to you're going to yell at us and say something and make it personal. We're going to stand up for ourselves.
Between the lines, Boston would take the lead in the eighth on only 3 pitches to start the inning from Elvis Peguero, a double and a single, and that'd be all the Red Sox would need to win 2-1 and stave off the sweep. Next up is day baseball on Memorial Day, as it should be, and it should be a doozy. For his first time as a visiting manager, Council bringing his second-place Cubs in for a 4-game set against the NL Central leading Brewers. Our coverage will get started with Brewers warm-up at 2 with Dom Catronio. Network coverage at 2:35 right here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals are moving on. The Ads knock off the Grand Rapids Griffins Sunday evening in a do-or-die Game 5 at Milwaukee Panther Arena. Goaltender Troy Gostnik stopping all 30 shots he saw. He's the first ADS goalie in over 11 years to blank the opponent in the Calder Cup playoffs. Attendance for the game was over 7,800, the most ever for the Admirals since they joined the AHL back in 2001. Now it's a familiar face in the Western Conference Finals, the Coachella Valley Firebirds. The ADS hoping to cancel their show this year. Game 1 in California is Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
Thanks a lot, Wyatt. I think a lot of people are excited about that game. And our coverage, as you said, gets underway at 2 o'clock today. The Brewers versus the Cubs. What a way to spend Memorial Day. Let's see. We were talking about Memorial Day and how a lot of people didn't have the opportunity to grill yesterday because of the weather. We've got some grilling tips for you for today and the rest of summer. It's all coming up right here on WTMJ 748. You know, throughout the morning, we've been telling you if you want to find out about all of the events happening today, all of the Memorial Day observances, a lot of them getting underway at 9 o'clock this morning, although at Wood National Cemetery. That one's getting underway at 8 o'clock this morning, but if you text the word events to the WTMJ Talk and text line at 855-616-1620, we'll let you know about all of them, the parade's happening later on this morning, and all of the events happening at the various cemeteries and at the various community centers throughout southeastern Wisconsin. It's going to be mostly cloudy and breezy with scattered afternoon and evening rainstorms. We're going to get up to the upper 60s today. Then tonight, that rain's going to end. It'll be on the cloudy side, 54. Tomorrow, more scattered showers and thunderstorms under cloudy skies, 68. Wednesday looks like it's going to get sunny, finally, with a high of 62, a little bit warmer inland. Thursday looks mostly sunny, 62 for a high, 68 inland. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high of 68 degrees. West Bend right now, it's 53. Sussex has 53. Waterford has 54. We've got 58 degrees at WTMJ. And WTMJ's five-day forecast is sponsored by Dave Drakamp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. It is 751. Well, in addition to remembering the brave men and women who fought for our freedoms and made that ultimate sacrifice, Memorial Day is a day for family and friends to get together and do some serious grilling. And joining us is Tony Impostato. He is with Pick and Save and Metro Markets. As a matter of fact, he's a meat and seafood specialist for them. And Tony, what are you going to be throwing on the grill today?
You know what? We got a lot of great things down here, Libby. One of our biggest things that we really, really are proud about is our pub burgers. That's always my first choice. It's always what our customers love to go for. Nothing says a burger on the grill.
How does a pub burger differ from a conventional hamburger?
So with our pub burgers, we have what we call the plus plus. We add that cheese for you. We add that flavor. We add bacon. We add fresh things like jalapenos. So we're upping the quality of that burger and elevating it to a higher level for that customer.
Well, I know a lot of people are concerned about their health and cholesterol and all that, so they choose not to put beef on the grill. What are some of the alternatives you can use?
We do also offer like ground turkey, so we'd be able to make patties of that. We also do offer plant-based for those people who are still want to enjoy firing up that grill and staying on track of what they enjoy. And then we offer that vegan aspect as well.
Is it harder or more difficult or challenging to put something on the grill that's not beef-based? And what are the tricks to do it right?
With a non-traditional kind of thing to throw on the grill, what is nice is a lot of these things translate really well. Vegan burger cooks just like it would if it was a beef patty. So it's still pretty simple to be able to put some of those non-traditional things on the grill and still get that result that the customer is looking for if they were going to have a beef burger.
You know, it is Wisconsin, so we are into our brats. What's the perfect timing on making a brat the way it needs to be without overcooking or undercooking it on the grill?
There's multiple different ways a customer can most definitely cook brats. A lot of ways people have done it is to make sure they feel that the product is cooked thoroughly through boiling brats and beer. You know, that's a Wisconsin thing. Spotted cow, a little sip for you. get that going, get that simmer. And then it's a quick just throw on the grill a nice little grill marks and char. And then if you're not that type of person, asking that meat cutter or that specialist of that department about good cooking temps. Majority of the time with these cooking temps, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes to get that product or that sausage to the correct temp to be able to serve.
Are you a believer in slow and low on the grill?
Oh, yes. Slow and low. It gives you a chance for that meat to really soak up that flavor. I'm also a charcoal man, so it's about making sure it gets that nice charcoal smell and flavor added in.
Do you think people make a mistake when they put too many condiments on the meat that they take off the grill?
There's a lot of people out there that do have very big preferences of loading up that burger with a lot of condiments. For me, it's simplifying so you can actually taste that product and actually enjoy that. So minimal amount of toppings is great. Obviously, ketchup, mustard, lettuce, and tomato. But again, we have those customers that like to take that to the next level by adding things like avocados and things like that. But when it comes to condiments, it's free game on how you want to build your burger.
Tony, I started out by saying that today, of course, is Memorial Day, and we're remembering the men and women who fought for our freedom and made that sacrifice. But I know that Metro Market and Pick and Save is doing something really special for veterans today.
Yes. So on Memorial Day, we remember the brave men and women who fought for our freedoms and made the ultimate sacrifice. In honor of those who served alongside them, we at Pick and Save and Metro Market will be offering a 10% discount to those veterans, their families, and active duty personnel. When they're in the store shopping, it is only on Memorial Day. All they have to do is present their military ID or their DD-214 or a dependent card, and they will receive that because we want to make sure that these veterans who have put in the time to protect us and all those, and for those who have made the ultimate sacrifice here at Pick and Save and Metro Market, we really want to show that support.
Tony, thanks for doing that. And what are you making today?
As I'm going through my stores, it's hard to pass up that ribeye, man. We got some great meat cutters out there that are putting out some beautiful steaks that are just mouth-watering and ready to get that on the grill.
I do love a great ribeye. Tony Impastato from Pick and Save and Metro Market, thanks for joining us on this Memorial Day.
Thank you.
Kind of getting hungry. Chris, I've been up since... Never mind. You don't want to know how early I got. See, that's the problem. You go to bed really early. It was one of those things yesterday where I kept waiting for the sun to go down so I could fall asleep. I woke up at 1:30 this morning. Now, I did go back to sleep for a little while, but I've been up and about since about a quarter till 3. Anyway, it's a long day. 7:56 is our time. Now, when we get back after the news, Julian Johnson's going to be in here. I last week talked with the former congressman, Patrick Kennedy. And as you well know, he certainly comes from a very famous family. But the interesting thing is he's written a book about mental health. And that seems to be his new challenge since he stepped down from Congress, is addressing public health and particularly the area of mental health, substance abuse. And we really get into it. First of all, he goes into historically, you might be amazed at some very famous people in our history who struggled with mental health. But then also he talks about his own family and their struggles. And, of course, I had to ask him about his cousin, Robert RFK Jr., who is running for president, and a bunch of other things. And we're going to have that entire interview for you after the news. It's all coming up on the Memorial Day edition of Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. And up next, Julian Johnson, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes.
This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins.
Several years ago, former Congressman Patrick Kennedy shared the story of his personal and family challenges with mental health issues in his best-selling memoir, A Common Struggle. Now he has written another book along with his co-author, Stephen Fried, Profiles in Mental Health Courage. And joining us on our Tri-County Contracting Hotline is Patrick Kennedy. And Patrick, first I got to ask you, you've adapted the title Profiles in Mental Health Courage, obviously inspired by your late uncle, President Kennedy. Have you heard from Caroline? Is she okay with you adapting that title?
Well, in a real way, what President Kennedy wrote about when he featured the 8 senators, I found that 4 of them, and that these were easy senators to find out about, which tells you a lot since it had been a couple hundred years and some of them had been alive, they suffered from mental illness and addiction and suffered greatly. John Quincy Adams lost two of his brothers to alcoholism in their 30s. John Quincy Adams, President Adams, lost his oldest son, George Washington Adams, to suicide at 28. Lucius Lamar saw his father take his life right in front of him. Sam Houston, another profile in the book, was known as the Big Drunk. Daniel Webster, who was my late father's hero, a leading abolitionist in the U.S. Senate, died of cirrhosis of the liver. My point is that we never talked about these illnesses. And part of the reason our country has a major public health challenge is that we've never funded treatment. And the reason we've never funded treatment is people have been so shamed and silent by these illnesses. And until we feature people who are courageous enough to tell their stories in depth, not just on the surface, we're never going to break the back of the stigma and silence that's holding our country back from addressing, frankly, I think the biggest public health challenge that we have as a nation today, and then that is the epidemic of suicide and overdose. So using President Kennedy's great title and applying it to these 12 profiles that I featured in the book, I think is an appropriate use of President Kennedy's legacy. Keep in mind, President Kennedy was the one who authored and signed into law the Community Mental Health Act of 1963. President Kennedy's sister, my Aunt Rosemary, was the reason we have Special Olympics today. And she was the inspiration behind him talking about having a sister with an intellectual disability. And so my family has always been about trying to advance the widening of opportunity for more Americans who have been left out. And people with mental illness and addiction are living on our streets. They're incarcerated in our jails and prisons. And they need to be treated with dignity and respect as opposed as pariahs. And they're pariahs because we don't understand the nature of a mental illness and addiction.
Patrick,
and that is what we're after in doing this book.
You know, we're so familiar with tragedies on your dad's side of the family, obviously. But there's one tragedy that you profile in this book about a cousin on your mom's side.
You know, I have addiction on both sides of my family. And on my mom's side, both my mother suffered from alcoholism. Her sister suffered from alcoholism. My grandmother died of alcoholism and wasn't found for a week because she was isolated and alone, which is often the case with these illnesses. My cousin, Mark, lost his son, Harry, named after my grandfather, to suicide at 22 years of age. He had never talked about losing Harry because, of course, anyone who does lose a loved one to overdose or suicide, you know, most likely doesn't talk at all because of the shame of these illnesses. But he opened up in this book, as does the other profiles that I feature. And when I talked to him about his son, I also talked to Harry's brother, and I talked to Harry's roommate in college to get their perspectives on what they saw in Harry that might have led up to his suicide. And it's interesting, none of them talked to each other. In other words, Harry's father didn't talk to Harry's brother, didn't talk to Harry's roommate. If all of them had talked and shared what they had shared with me, maybe they would have had a different perspective on how, you know, vulnerable Harry was to suicide. And so part of destigmatizing this illness is to save lives, because if people are more open about talking, there's less lives, I think, will be lost.
And coming up in 8 minutes, we're going to ask Patrick Kennedy his thoughts about his cousin running for president. And he's also going to share thoughts about his parents' problems with alcohol. Very candid interview with Patrick Kennedy, the son of the late Senator Ted Kennedy. It's 8:14. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we've got Wyatt with sports right here on WTMJ.
The Brewers avoid the sweep in Boston. The crew dropping a nail-biter in the series finale. Elvis Piguero, who had allowed just one hit and no runs in his previous five outings, allowing Boston to break the tie in the eighth inning. It took only three pitches.
Piguero looks back at second in the pitch. And a little bleeder into left. That's down for a base hit. Rafael around third. The Red Sox have a 2-1 lead.
The offense only managing one run, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. A disappointing end to the road trip, which Milwaukee finishes 4-5 on. They do take the series from the Red Sox 3-2. Now it's time for a big division showdown with the Cubs. Only 3 games separate the two teams. Brewers in first place in the NL Central, Cubs in second. And of course, it's the return of Craig Counsell to the ballpark where he managed in the home dugout for 9 years. For the first time, he'll be in the first base dugout and wearing a different shade of blue. His successor, Pat Murphy, says he plans to check in with his former colleague.
I'll probably call him to see how he's doing, if he needs anything. Stop to the store to him. He's going to have a late night. If he needs anything, I'll stop to the store and get him a sandwich or something or whatever, you know, whatever he wants. Yeah, I mean, we're friends, so I'm right up the road from him here in Chicago. He can stay at the place.
Our coverage starting at 2 with Brewers warm-up with Dom Catronio here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals have done it again. It was deja vu all over again. A 2-0 victory for the Grand Rapids Griffins, and the Ads' magical season continues. They are moving on to the Western Conference Finals in the Calder Cup playoffs. They'll take on the Coachella Valley Firebirds for the second straight season. Yes, that Coachella. And let's see if the City of Festivals can prove its dominance in hockey as well as on the stage. Game 1 set for Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
Thanks a lot, Wyatt. Yes, today's game against the Cubs, it's going to be a doozy, isn't it? It's 8:19, 58 degrees at WTMJ. I'll have your forecast. And also, we'll have the second part of our interview with Patrick Kennedy, the former congressman, where he talks about not just his cousin, RFK, running for president, but he's got some thoughts on President Trump, President Biden. And also, he reveals what he wished he had done as far as his own parents and their problems with alcohol. That's all ahead right here on WTMJ. On this Memorial Day, it's going to be mostly cloudy and breezy. We've got some scattered afternoon and evening storms and a high in the upper 60s. Tonight looks like that rain's going to end. It'll be cloudy, 54 for a low. And then tomorrow looks like we've got more showers and thunderstorms. It'll be scattered, though. Under cloudy skies, 68. Wednesday, finally, we'll see some sun and we'll get up to the about 62 near the lake, 67 as you go inland. Right now in Cedarburg, we have 55 degrees. Oak Creek's at 56. Oconomowoc has 55. And we have 58 degrees at 8:22 on WTMJ. Well, you know, we had the first part of that interview with the son of the late Senator Ted Kennedy. We've got Patrick Kennedy. And I also asked him about a number of things, including his thoughts on the current presidential candidates. We're talking with Patrick Kennedy about his book, Profiles in Mental Health Courage. You mentioned about some of the problems within your own family. And I have to ask you about your cousin, RFK. A couple of weeks ago, he came out with this story about a brain worm. Is that something you were familiar with before this became public?
Well, no. I think most Americans weren't familiar with that in general. Of course, there were lots of stories following that initial story about him. But my family, I just have to say, is supporting President Biden and me in particular, because President Biden's done more for mental health and addiction than any other president in history. And he's done more to enforce the law that I had the chance to write when I was in Congress, called the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act, which means that insurance companies can't deny mental health care any more than they would deny cancer care or cardiovascular disease care or diabetes. And Joe Biden has enforced that law. Joe Biden has invested more money in community mental health than any other previous president. So I am in favor of Joe Biden. That's who I'm for. I'm not talking about who I'm against. I clearly want democracy to win in this election. And I worry about our country's democracy if President Trump is returned to office, given his promises to take us backwards in terms of an autocratic kind of approach to government, which I think is dangerous for our country. But, you know, I think that Joe Biden should be reelected. I worry that my cousin would hinder that reelection and turn hand the election over to Donald Trump, which I think is not good for the country. And that's the reason I've been so outspoken in support of President Biden.
And clearly your focus is on mental health. Are you concerned about the mental health either of your cousin or of former President Trump?
You know, one thing I've learned is that you can't diagnose someone, you know, without letting a clinician who knows and is trained to do that be able to do that. And one of the ways we stigmatize mental illness and addiction is we cast kind of a diagnosis on someone that we find repugnant and we call them mentally ill. Honestly, I think a lot of people who suffer from mental illness would not like to be lumped in the same category as Donald Trump. You know, having a mental illness doesn't mean that they're, you know, so self-centered and selfish to the extreme like Donald Trump. They're suffering from an illness that, you know, he frankly ignored as president. He did not put any money. He talked a good game about the opioid crisis, but he did nothing to help fund, you know, the solution, nor hold people accountable. So we need to evaluate our people who are going to vote for or not vote for based upon where their record is.
I know that you are really working as a political advocate for public health. Obviously, you stepped away from Congress. Was one of the reasons you stepped away because you were concerned about your own mental health?
No doubt about it. You know, I had to leave Congress because I was suffering from a chronic illness that needed to be addressed in more than just a short stay in treatment. I needed a fundamental change in my life in order to get my arms around my own progressive addiction. And that's why I left Congress. And since I left Congress, frankly, I've been sober, which means I've not had to drink or use drugs or any mood or mind altering substance since February 22nd, 2011. And I picked a permanent sobriety date. I focused my life on my own recovery, and that's made all the difference. I had to do that in order to, I think, survive what is really a fatal illness if it's not properly treated.
In retrospect, do you wish you could have helped your mom and your dad with their issues with alcohol?
You know, I think that if we had a more enlightened view of what they both went through back when they were suffering in silence, they may have been able to openly get help and not feel like they were being judged, and probably would have had a better chance of being able to move on with their lives and get past the great disabling impact of alcoholism and addiction and depression and anxiety and trauma, which, of course, my father faced enormously. So I think that in the future, I want people to be able to get help just like they do for HIV/AIDS, just like they do for cancer, which was also stigmatized in an earlier age. And if they don't screen for a mental illness and addiction at stage one, then we're not going to be able to get our arms around this crisis the way we need to. We cannot wait for these illnesses to become stage four illnesses. In other words, at crisis levels, before we reach out and help one another. And that's part of the reason I wrote this book, Profiles in Mental Health Courage, because I want people to feel more open about telling their stories, because they actually read that these stories are quite common amongst all Americans.
Patrick J. Kennedy, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's 8:28 and 59 degrees at WTMJ. Memorial Day marks the beginning of summer, so that means there's going to be a lot of people out there on their motorcycles. And joining us from Cycle Trader Magazine is Philip Phillips. And yes, that is his name. And Philip is one of the people who reviews these cycles. He looks out there. And most importantly, you are involved in motorcycle safety. So tell us what we need to be aware of if we don't ride a motorcycle, and there are people out there who do.
Well, I think if you don't ride, you know, obviously, keeping an eye out, making sure you're checking your mirrors all the time, every time, making sure that, you know, you're looking for that headlight that may just be a single headlight, for sure, for sure. So if you're not riding, but if you are riding, one of the top considerations is definitely safety, right? It's always crucial to wear protective gear, helmets, jackets, gloves, you know, definitely can reduce any injury in case you do get into a situation. Invest in a good, well-fitting jacket and a nice DOT-approved, Department of Transportation-approved helmet is just massive, right? And then also staying visible to those other motorists, like I mentioned earlier, you know, asking for folks who are in cars to keep their eyes out. It's also incumbent on the rider, right, to make sure that you're wearing something bright and reflective, using your headlights, adhering to traffic laws, paying close attention to road conditions, and, you know, ensuring you ride within your skill level, right? If you're a starter, don't ride too fast. Don't take curves too quick. And, you know, just being vigilant and smart and prepared is the key to a safe riding experience.
Well, sometimes I've talked with people and they are concerned because they feel that some people on their cycles take a lot of chances, particularly on the interstate. They're kind of swerving in and out of traffic and at a high rate of speed. Drivers in cars and trucks don't always see them quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, well, you're kind of increasing your odds of being in a bad situation on a motorcycle if you just aren't behaving, to be honest with you, right? I think that when it comes to riding, you have to be responsible for your safety as much as you want somebody else in a car to be responsible for safety. And, hey, let's be honest. Now we got this smartphone thing, right? And we also have all these cars with screens. So you have to be even more vigilant in making sure that you don't take chances and do anything that, you know, would put you in a situation where, hey, look, if you're going too fast and you're speeding up on somebody that's getting ready to merge into a different lane, well, you know, you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage and you're actually kind of putting them at a disadvantage at seeing you.
Philip, I know you're a third generation rider. I'm going to ask you a question, and it's controversial among a lot of cycle riders, and that is, why do a lot of them not want to wear helmets?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I've tried it one time in my life. You know, like you said, third generation. I've been riding about 10 years myself. And, you know, close to us, I believe it's South Carolina, that's close to me. I'm here in Virginia. And they allow you to ride without a helmet. And it felt so strange. And I think it's one of those where some people just like to take chances. And, you know, the reality is, there are so many different helmet styles these days that if you don't want something big and bulky, you can find something small. So I think it boils down to, do you just like to take chances? And I'm a bald-headed guy, so I don't have any hair, any wind blow through my hair. But yeah, a helmet is key. You got to wear a helmet.
What's the most exciting part for you when you get on your bike?
You know, I've got a Harley, ride a 2010 48. And honestly, these days, finishing a work day and just taking a ride, it clears your mind and it keeps you sharp. Right. As we've been talking about safety and being attentive, when you're riding, you have to have your eyes on the road, looking at what everybody's doing. You can be relaxed in doing that, but it does kind of get you going. Right. It's a freedom that's there. And then also, again, being very attentive and understanding what's going around you. And sometimes I like to ride with my friends. Right. That's also exciting and fun, too, where I'm located. The beach is about 30 minutes away. And then I've also got some country roads. So for me, the exciting part at this stage in riding is being able to clear my mind and just enjoy something that's fun and just not sitting behind a steering wheel.
Well, I know you got a couple of young kids. Do you ever take them out?
Not yet. They're a little too young. You know, my daughter is 5. My son is 9 now in the garage. They love to sit on it, which used to not be the case. You know, I've got a Harley. It's got a couple mods to it. So it's a little loud, but it's kind of loud for a reason. Right. And also make sure that riders can not only see me, but also hear me. But they're getting there. You know, my father rides. My grandfather no longer with us. We've got his old bike. So my son has taken a seat on all of them and he's ridden around the yard with my dad. So there may be some future riders. But right now, they're just a little young.
Well, Philip Phillips from Cycle Trader Magazine, thank you so much for joining us today and safe riding to you, sir.
Thank you, Libby.
It's 59 degrees at 8:39. We're going to have your forecast right after this on WTMJ. On this Memorial Day, it's going to be mostly cloudy and breezy. We've got some scattered afternoon, evening, and rainstorms. We'll get up to the upper 60s. Then tonight, that rain's going to end. It'll be cloudy, 54 for a low. Tomorrow looks like we've got some scattered showers and thunderstorms under mostly cloudy skies and a high of 68. Wednesday, it's going to be sunny, finally, 62 for a high, 67 inland. Thursday, more sunshine. Temperatures about the same, low 60s near the lake, a little bit warmer. Upper 60s as you go further inland. And Friday looks partly cloudy with a high of 68 degrees. Waking up on Wisconsin, waking around southeastern Wisconsin on this Memorial Day morning in Elkhart Lake, you've got 54 degrees. Muskego is 56. Lake Geneva is 57. And we have 58 degrees at WTMJ at 8:43. And WTMJ's five-day forecast is sponsored by Dave Draycamp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Coming up in 1 minute, it's Wyatt Barmore Pooley and Sports right here on WTMJ.
A tense game boiling over in the seventh inning at Fenway Park after a Christian Yelich inning-ending ground out. Red Sox pitcher Chris Martin exchanging words with Brewers first base coach Quinton Berry, leading to the benches emptying yet again this season for the Brew Crew. No ejections on either side. After the game, Brewers manager Pat Murphy weighing in on the dust-up.
I'm not going to speculate what the kid was doing, but if you're staring at somebody and you're saying it, it could be interpreted that you're saying it to them. So, you know, we take offense to you're going to yell at us and say something and make it personal. We're going to stand up for ourselves.
Between the lines, Boston would take the lead in the eighth on only three pitches to start the inning from Elvis Peguero, a double and a single, and that'd be all the Red Sox would need to win 2-1 and stave off the sweep. Next up is day baseball on Memorial Day, as it should be, and it should be a doozy. For his first time as a visiting manager, Council bringing his second-place Cubs in for a four-game set against the NL Central leading Brewers. Our coverage will get started with Brewers warm-up at 2 with Dom Catronio. Network coverage at 2:35 right here on WTMJ. And the Milwaukee Admirals are moving on. The Ads knock off the Grand Rapids Griffins Sunday evening in a do-or-die Game 5 at Milwaukee Panther Arena. Goaltender Troy Gostnik stopping all 30 shots he saw. He's the first Ads goalie in over 11 years to blank the opponent in the Calder Cup playoffs. Attendance for the game was over 7,800, the most ever for the Admirals since they joined the AHL back in 2001. Now it's a familiar face in the Western Conference Finals, the Coachella Valley Firebirds. The Ads hoping to cancel their show this year. Game 1 in California is Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm Wyatt Barmore-Pooley, WTMJ Sports.
Thanks a lot, Wyatt, and that is going to be a doozy of a game today. First time Craig Council back in town. Oh boy, I think we're all going to be listening when our coverage gets underway at 2 o'clock today. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, if you know of any firefighters, you know, one of the things I have found through the years, my brother was a fire chief out in Colorado, I've known a lot of firefighters, is they do have downtime when they're in the firehouse, and that means they cook. That's what they do. They cook, and they are really, really good cooks, and they get kind of competitive. Well, for all of the firefighters in the state of Wisconsin, there is going to be a firehouse cooking challenge going on, and we've got all the details about it, including how your favorite firefighter can enter, and that's all coming up right here on the Memorial Day edition of Wisconsin Morning News.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
There are a lot of ways to honor our local heroes, and here's an interesting one, and it's all about firefighters. Yep, they're having a firehouse cook challenge, and they're inviting firefighters from throughout the state to participate in it, and joining us is Jack Barron. He's going to be one of the judges for the competition. He's a culinary instructor at Waukesha County Technical College, and Jack, tell us about this firehouse challenge.
Yeah, so the firehouse challenge was created by a company, Iron Mountain Refrigeration Company. They're out of Pleasant Prairie in Wisconsin, and they just wanted to be able to give back to firefighters. And so this competition was created, and the competition itself runs from May 1st through June 14th. So we're asking for any firefighter to, in the state of Wisconsin, submit a recipe to ironmountainrefrigeration.com/firehouse-cook-challenge. And when they submit the recipe, myself and the other judges will take a look at those recipes and looking for originality and the inspiration behind the recipe and be able to choose the top three recipes. And then those top three will go into a head-to-head cook-off on August 8th at the Polish Center in Franklin. And then the top three can earn prizes up to $5,000 that will split between the firefighter and the station. But the caveat to that is it's the equipment itself. So the Iron Mountain Refrigeration has been gracious to say that the winner is going to be able to choose $2,500 out of their catalog, basically. And then the firehouse itself will get the other. So if you're the first place winner, $2,500 you get to choose for your household. And then $2,500 will go towards the firehouse to get some new refrigeration in there. And second place splits $2,500 between the firefighter and the firehouse. And third place is $1,000 that goes to the winning firefighter, and he can choose how he would like to spend that. They'll work with the Iron Mountain Refrigeration and being able to see what's available for them. And yeah, it's just something to be able to promote the firefighters. And, you know, me being a chef, this is what I do professionally, but I think there's a lot of firefighters. I think their trade is not only do they fight fires and do a lot of the other things for community development, and they do a lot with cooking, and I think they're always associated with chefs, right? And so this is why I wanted to get involved. I think it's great that we'll be able to showcase the chef talents of firefighters, and so I'm excited for this.
Well, I know a lot of firefighters. As a matter of fact, my brother was a fire chief out in Colorado, and one of the things, because there is a lot of downtime as they're waiting for calls, they do spend a lot of time cooking, and there's almost like a challenge among the firefighters sometimes when they create these recipes. Now, you said that you're looking for them to go to the website and to submit the recipe, but I understand you also want them to take a photo of the food that they prepare?
Yes, we absolutely want to take a photo because the visual appeal of the dish is going to be one of the other things that we're looking for. So we would like to see that recipe prepared and then a photo of the dish and then with the inspiration behind it and, you know, whatever else you'd like to tell about your story for why you chose that particular recipe. We're looking super forward to it.
As a instructor in the culinary arts and a chef yourself, what are you looking for as a judge? How will you determine if this sounds like this is going to be a good recipe?
For me, it's about the originality. I'm looking for something that maybe I haven't seen before. The visual appeal, it looks nice. And then also the inspiration behind it. I mean, sometimes it's about that story. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to always mean what has to be something that we've never seen before. But if it's something that maybe we've seen a lot, but this is the reason why you submitted that recipe, and there's a true, like, great inspirational story behind it, maybe the firehouse itself, maybe the recipe was made for them for someone that they helped, right? And they've taken that recipe for someone that made that for them, and then they make it for the firehouse as like an annual dish because of something this firehouse did. Maybe there's a cool story behind it of why that recipe is what it is. And the recipe itself looks great, has visual appeal, has a little originality to it. All of that we're taking into consideration as we're looking.
All right. Now, if there are firefighters out there in the state of Wisconsin, and again, any firefighter in the state, they can enter their recipes. And what we're going to do is we're going to post that on our website so they can link in. And tell us again when the deadline is on this.
So the deadline to enter is June 14th.
Okay, June 14th. And again, open to all Wisconsin firefighters. They can enter it. And then in August, on the 8th, at the Polish Center in Franklin, that's where the top three firefighters are going to come. And there's going to be a cook-off challenge among the three.
Yes.
Well, I know you're looking forward to it, and I bet you can't wait to taste some of those tasty items.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. I'm looking so forward to this.
Jack Buren, culinary instructor at Waukesha County Technical College. And again, the Firehouse Challenge, they can enter online, and we will have that posted right here at WTMJ. Thank you so much, Jack.
Thank you so much.
And you can also text the word fire to the WTMJ Talk and Text line at 855-616-1620 for that link to sign up for the Firehouse Challenge. But remember, you have to be a firefighter. 855, it's time to celebrate an everyday hero. Here's WTMJ's Eric Bilstead.
An everyday hero is when we on Wisconsin's Morning News celebrate an average John or Jane Doe who had no idea when they got up one morning that they'd be saving a life. Today we head to Cleveland, Ohio. John Stikovich could have kept driving. He could have just called 911, but he didn't. He saw a house fire and immediately stopped.
He had to save the baby. That's how it was going to be.
So here's what happened. He sees this house fire while driving to work, stops his car, gets out, and he finds mom in the front yard with a baby girl. The baby's twin, the mother says, was still in the house.
The mother was sitting on the tree lawn with her one baby, and I asked her if she was all right, and she said, my baby's still in the house. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God.
Stikovich tells Fox 8 News that he had to go in the home. He runs into the house, looks for the child, but he can't find her.
Came back out, asked her where the baby was. She told me next to the kitchen by the baby gate.
Okay, next to the kitchen, goes by the baby gate. Okay, so he runs back into the home, and the smoke was starting to really overpower now.
And it was getting so bad in there, I was getting ready to leave, actually. And the baby cried, or it made a sound. So I said, oh, my, you know, I'm thinking to myself, the baby's right here. So I just lurched forward. My arm went across his leg. I grabbed it by the leg, and we were both out.
He gets out of the house with the child, saves her life. She suffered only some smoke inhalation, some light burns on her cheek, arm, and knee. Otherwise, she is okay. Stikovich says, hey, Someone would do it for him.
Everybody just calling and saying how great of a job it was, but I mean, I would do it for anybody. It doesn't matter. And I would hope somebody would do it for me. That baby gets to live today.
That's right, John. Because of you, that baby is living today. John Stigovitz, thank you for being an everyday hero. Everyday Hero, sponsored by Azura Memory Care and Assisted Living, transforming the culture of care. Eric Bilstead, WTMJ News.
It's 8:57. I'm Libby Collins. Thanks for joining us today on this Memorial Day. Keep in mind, there are a number of events going on, between now and noon, especially. At 9 o'clock, as we talked with them in Wauwatosa, that event gets underway. At Hart Park, there's a couple of parades in Elm Grove at 10:30. Merton at 10 o'clock. And if you want to check the entire list of all of the observances for Memorial Day throughout the area, we have them posted at WTMJ.com. Stick around after the news with Julian. It's the Scafidi Salute to Service. Then we have the ABC Memorial Day service special. And of course, Brewers Warm Up gets underway at 2 o'clock today. It's all ahead on WTMJ.